second Korean Air 747, the passenger flight they have been expecting, has now arrived. The military aircraft are circling overhead.
Events from September 11th, 2001, as seen from Whitehorse in a new Yukon-made documentary. It's the KHNS Local News. I'm Burn Power. That story and more coming up.
Hanes is proud of their outdoor gems and ample recreation opportunities. It's expressed in the hockey team, pickup soccer and ultimate frisbee players, the cyclist and ski clubs, walking group, and Well and Fit, just to name a few. But what about at the borough level?
It seems like there's a need in Hanes or a desire to make recreation a little more of a priority in the borough.
Assembly members Damon Hoffman and Steve Vick want to revive a borough-level group that focuses on parks and recreation. They say it would help unify citizen groups and steer the borough in improving on recreation opportunities in the Chilkat Valley. Assemblyman Vick at this week's assembly meeting.
You know, right now we have the outdoors is at our doorstep. We can go out there, but you need an ATV, or you need to go on an expedition kayak trip, or you need some major stuff, because there's really only two or three accessible trails to hike on here. And in the wintertime, you gotta go up the road. If we can develop a trail system and have a rec department and we got ice hockey and all that other stuff going on, people are gonna be able to come here and do, you know, I think people like to go and spend, you know, expensive trips and go skiing, but also people want to go on a tote with their kids and spend a weekend and be able to go to, you know, cafes or the restaurants. So let's say you're 2 weeks mega vacations, they come here and they go fishing one day and they go hiking one day and they go mountain biking one day. And they just made an outdoor adventure and based themselves out of our city center.
Hoffman noted that now is a particularly good time to bring back the group that used to exist in a different form because of the ongoing work to set borough-wide community development goals.
I would actually take it a step further. I believe that we need a recreation component in the comprehensive plan. I think we have enough user groups in town, enough people who are interested, that this is something that we should be working on. And I would volunteer to work on that however that can happen.
An ordinance to reestablish a Parks and Recreation Advisory Committee was introduced unanimously at the Assembly's regular meeting Tuesday. It's a first step in potentially forming the group. Several public hearings will follow at upcoming assembly meetings where residents have a chance to put in their two cents.
And I think this is something that I've certainly seen a lot of ground support in the community for.
Borough Manager Mark Ernest.
But that's to bring issues to discuss ideas and programs and services and opportunities and coordinate with all of the different groups in the community to come up with a comprehensive overall plan for benefiting the community in a very important way. That's through recreation, that's through health and fitness. So I think this is really a great thing.
The draft Hanes Ordinance sees a committee that advises the borough in the operation and maintenance of parks, recreation programs, facilities, and activities in Hanes. The ordinance also attempts to clear up the issues that were problematic when the former Parks and Recreation Advisory Board existed. Just a few miles down the canal, Skagway has a Parks and Recreation group with three assembly members on it. They credit the borough group for things such as trail work, grant writing for trail improvements, establishing the recreation center, and developing the legendary Seven Pastures baseball fields.
Next, a reminder from the Alaska Department of Transportation and Public Facilities. Motorists are advised that studded tire season ends statewide on May 1st. Due to predicted adverse weather, an extension was issued earlier this month by the Department of Public Safety, extending the deadline for motorists south of a 60-degree latitude, creating a universal statewide deadline. Driver safety is always the highest priority, said DOT Commissioner Mark Lucan. However, driving with studded tires after the snow is gone contributes to highway deterioration. Their use must be strictly enforced to the legal season, he said. Driving with studded tires after the deadline could incur a citation from Alaska State Troopers containing a $50 fine for each tire. Various municipalities across the state have a stricter fine for citations. In the awestruck disbelief of September 11th, 2001, another related event played itself out just north of us in Canada. A new documentary provides the details. The CBC Whitehorse has the story.
September the 11th, 2001 is a day that many people in Whitehorse will never put behind them. The horror of what was happening in the U.S. came all too close to home. Under suspicion of being hijacked, military jets from the U.S. and Canada escorted a Korean Airlines 747 into the Whitehorse Airport. And that set off a chain of events on the ground here that are the subject of a new film by Yukon filmmaker Max Fraser.
It has just landed.
It has just landed.
Just landed. It has just gone past the windows at the airport that I'm viewing.
All right.
Wheels to the ground. The fear, of course, of it being crashed or anything, I think, is now past.
The second Korean Air 747, the passenger flight they have been expecting, has now arrived. The military aircraft are circling overhead. The 747, the second one, has just arrived in a cloud of dust. It's turning around towards the end of the runway now, going to backtrack towards the ramp here. It's down safely. There's no indication of any trouble on board so far.
Never happened here. The Whitehorse 9/11 story had its world premiere on the weekend at the Dawson City International Short Film Festival, and Max Fraser joins me in the studio this morning. Good morning.
Good morning, Rock.
How many years did it take to put this all together?
Well, a good 4 years off and on, and mostly on.
What exactly, Max, inspired you to do the film?
Well, it was a profound experience for our community, I think, quite unlike any other. And the simple evidence is that anytime you bring up that topic, somebody's got a story. And that was the biggest challenge of all in making the film, is people talk about it as though it was yesterday. There are really strong emotions ran through the community that day. It marked us for life. Mm-hmm. And it's time that story was told. From my perspective as a northerner,
can you give us an idea of what folks will see and hear when they're watching the film?
Well, it's a point of view documentary. I wanted to capture the experience of people like myself who had children in school on that day. And I think the whole community kind of woke up that morning. We heard the radios talk about these events. We turned on the TV. We stood there in front of the television watching towers crumble or get hit and said, "Oh my God, that's horrible." And then a moment later, we said to ourselves, "Thank goodness I live in the Yukon. It'll never happen here."
Mm-hmm.
And we went to work, we went to school, somewhat in shock from the big events. And then, as incredible as it seemed, and as unbelievable as it seemed, the police were on the radio saying, "There's a hijacked airliner coming. Schools are being evacuated. Parents, go get your kids." So that's the experience I wanted to capture, basically a point of view documentary about the experience of parents in the community.
Now, there's been a longstanding mystery as to why the Korean Airlines switched to the hijacked transponder channel. What have you been able to learn about that?
Well, one of the curious things was that when I started looking at what the explanations were for the actual chain of events, nothing really added up. It all said pilot error, communication problem, a low fuel alert. Well, in fact, and I got documents from the U.S. Federal Aviation Administration through U.S. Freedom of Information laws that confirmed that the pilot was instructed to change its transponder to 7500, which is the emergency code for only one thing in aviation, and that's hijack. And that's a bizarre and unusual order. And I don't have the full story behind that. I worked with some people back east. We tried quite hard to chase down an explanation and get an interview with somebody on that. We weren't able to, but my hope is that by having my film out there now, that it'll move things forward so that we actually do get a full explanation of the events 10 years after the event. I don't think there's any reason why national or military authorities should be withholding information 10 years after the event.
Was that the hardest thing to investigate during this film?
Well, it was very frustrating. I actually got more information out of the U.S. government than I got out of the Canadian government. I got audio tapes from Anchorage Air Traffic Control talking to both Korean Airlines and the fighter jets that had that passenger aircraft lit in their targeting systems It came very close to being blown out of the sky. So the film that people can see at the Art Center tonight is pretty dramatic. It's kind of a two-dimensional film in that it has the point of view of parents, the experience in the schools. I interview kids as well. And then there's a reveal section where we go into what happened and why, dealing mainly with U.S. Military and civil aviation authorities and the documentation there. So I think it's been a long time coming, and I'm glad we're nearing completion and people have a chance to see it tonight up at the Art Center.
Now, it was shown, of course, on, as I mentioned, on the weekend in Dawson. What was the reaction with the audience?
Well, there was quite a buzz. I think especially when the film turned from, you know, the recounting and retelling of events, the experiences of parents and kids and teaching staff, to the reveal section, the mood changed in the room, and I was pleased that afterwards there were quite a few compliments. I think it works well as a film. It's a pretty good audience experience, and so we have it on tonight in Whitehorse, and I hope for other screenings, but for now, tonight's the opportunity at 7 and 9.
All right. Yukon filmmaker Max Fraser, his film Never Happened Here, as he mentioned, the Whitehorse 9/11 story.
For KHNS News, this is Byrne Power with help tonight from Tara Bicknell and the CBC.